the single market, a neoliberal tool of the boss's fight for a socialist Brexit. Hannah Sell, Socialist Party Deputy General Secretary. This AMA's four-week holiday is drawing to a close. She is returning to an autumn of watching her party tear itself apart over the EU. Following her humiliating general election campaign, she is a dead prime minister walking, powerless to be more than a passive bystander in the Tories' civil war. According to the capitalist media, the only Brexit choices on offer are the hard or soft visions offered by the two wings of the Tory party. Unfortunately, many leaders of the workers' movement, including the leadership of the TUC, also paint the issue in the same terms, supporting the soft Brexit wing. None of the variants of Brexit on offer from the Tory party, however, are in the interests of working and middle-class people. Reactionaries. The right-wing nationalist hard Brexiteers represent the view of a small minority of the British capitalist class, if even that. They are full of utopian dreams of a return to the days when Britain was the world's biggest imperialist power, and of resentment at their nation's inexorable decline. Their growing dominance in the Tory party, exacerbated by the collapse of a section of UKIP into their ranks, means that the Tories can no longer be relied on by the capitalist class to act in their interests. The idea, however remote, that the ultra-reactionary toffened MP for the 18th century Jacob Rees-Mogg could become leader of the Tory party sums up the dire state it is in. It is clear that the nationalist Little Englander Tories offer no way forward, but nor does the George Osborne wing. It is criminal to suggest, as Polly Toynbee has in the pages of The Guardian, that we should be looking to the likes of Osborne, responsible as Chancellor for inflicting the worst austerity since World War II, for a Brexit in the interests of the majority. Osborne and his ilk represent the view of the majority of the capitalist class in Britain, which would prefer no Brexit, and are fighting for as soft a Brexit as possible. They aim to remain within the single market and the customs union, if not in name at least in substance. They are driven by what is in the best interests of their system. In essence, the EU is an agreement between the different capitalist classes of Europe, in order to create the largest possible market. The different national capitalist classes within it remain in competition with each other, but cooperate in order to maximize their profits. For the weaker economies of Europe, above all Greece, it has meant virtual neo-colonial exploitation by the stronger powers. Inevitably, since the start of the global economic crisis in 2009, there has been a rise in national tensions within the EU which will, at a certain stage, lead to a fracturing of the euro and major crisis within the EU. Nonetheless, the majority of Britain's capitalists think they can make fatter profits inside the EU than outside. It is ludicrous to claim, as the Blairite Labour MP Chuka Yumana has, that the single market is, uniquely, a framework of rules that protects people from the worst excesses of globalization and unfettered capitalism. It certainly doesn't protect those fleeing war in the Middle East, and largely kept outside of the borders of Fortress Europe, horrendously often left to drown in the Mediterranean. But nor does it protect those already inside the EU's borders from the worst excesses of capitalism. On the contrary, the institutions of the EU have inflicted terrible hardship on the workers of Greece, Spain, Portugal, Ireland and elsewhere. The pro-EU majority of the capitalist class currently has no party they can rely on to act in their interests. Instead, there are politicians in all the major parties, not least the right wing of Labour, collaborating together to try and defend the interests of the capitalist elite. According to the Financial Times, before Parliament shut for the summer, they came together in a meeting in the office of Blairite MP Chuka Yumana. Also present were Anna Subri from the Tories, Stephen Jeffins from the SNP, Jonathan Edwards from Plaid Cymru and Joe Swinson from the Liberal Democrats. This alliance is not only about Brexit. It is also part of a conscious attempt to undermine Corbyn, and help to prevent something that the capitalist elite fear even more than a hard Brexit, a Jeremy Corbyn-led Labour government. Also over the summer, rumours have abounded of a new supposedly centrist party being formed for the same reasons. This may not seem to be posed immediately, but is inherent in the situation. It is nada for Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell to suggest, as he appeared to in The Guardian on the 19th of August, that it is no longer necessary to push for urgent constitutional changes to democratize the Labour Party because the nature of the Parliamentary Labour Party, PLP, has changed. Measures like mandatory resolution, restoring trade union rights within Labour and readmittance of expelled socialists are more urgently needed than ever. Unfortunately, the majority of the PLP remain pro-capitalist and opposed to Jeremy Corbyn, even if his popularity means that some of them are currently holding back from saying so openly. Instead, they are mobilizing against him on the issue of a soft Brexit. It is urgent that Jeremy Corbyn, John McDonnell and the workers' movement launch a major campaign, not for a hard or soft Brexit, but for an internationalist Brexit that is in the interests of the working and middle class, both in Britain and across Europe. Otherwise, it is inevitable that the different wings of the capitalist class will succeed in confusing and dividing working class people. Our starting point is the diametrical opposite of the starting point for all sides of the Tory party. We have to support what benefits working class people and cements their unity, and to implacably oppose that which undermines it. Capitalist freedom. What attitude does that mean taking to the single market? The single market finally came into being in 1993, following negotiations that began with the 1986 Single European Act, something that Maggie Thatcher claimed credit for initiating. From the beginning, it has been based on the so-called four freedoms: the free movement of goods, services, capital and labor. It is policed by the European Commission, made up of one representative from each EU state, which takes infringements of market rules before the European Court of Justice, ECJ. From its inception, it has aimed to drive through neoliberal anti-working class measures, in order to maximize the profits of the capitalist elite. The single market compels the privatization of public services, prohibits nationalization, and makes it easier for employers to exploit workers in numerous ways. For example, the ECJ rulings in the Viking and Laval cases, which put corporations' rights of establishment before the right of workers to strike. Or the EU Posted Workers Directive, which does not recognize agreements between unions and employers, and has been systematically used to undermine the rights and conditions of workers. The Posted Workers Directive was at the heart of the Lindsey oil refinery strike in 2009. Jeremy Corbyn was right, therefore, to say shortly after the June general election, that Brexit should not mean remaining part of the single market. Nor should it mean remaining part of the customs union, which means handing the right to negotiate trade deals to the European Commission alone. In his Guardian article, John McDonnell expressed it as, "The bottom line for me is the new relationship we have with Europe should be designed on the basis that we can implement our manifesto. This is not a bad starting point. A Corbyn-led government should pledge to enter the negotiations declaring that all EU laws which hindered this would immediately be annulled. This is not a question of fighting for British sovereignty, as Labour's shadow Trade Secretary Barry Gardiner unfortunately put it when correctly arguing to leave the single market, but fighting in the interests of the working class, not just in Britain but across Europe. There are, of course, aspects of EU law, such as various environmental and health and safety protections, which the workers' movement should have no objection to keeping other than a desire to strengthen them. And no one wants to see what the soft Brexiteers paint as inevitable outside the single market: economic crisis, job losses and price increases. On the basis of a Tory hard Brexit, all of that would be posed, but nor does continuing as part of the crisis-ridden EU offer a way forward for working class people in Britain. Socialist measures. A socialist Brexit, by contrast, could be the start of building a society that was able to provide everyone with the prerequisites for a decent life: a high-quality secure home, a good job, free education, a top-class NHS, a living pension and more. In doing so, it would act as a beacon for workers and young people across Europe to take the same road, opening the path not only to mass opposition to the EU bosses' club, but also to a democratic socialist confederation of Europe. A starting point for a workers' Brexit would be to implement the demands at the end of this article, all of which would require a complete break with the single market. At the same time, doing so would inspire the 450 million workers remaining in the single market to fight for similar demands in their own countries. It would also terrify the capitalist class, not just in Britain but globally, who would see their rotten profit-driven system under threat from a mass movement for a new democratic, socialist society. Without doubt, the world's ruling elites would do all they could to sabotage the implementation of Jeremy Corbyn's program, including attempting to use the rules of the single market, if Britain remained inside it. But, provided a determined mass movement was mobilized in support of the government's program, they would not be able to succeed. The retreat of the Syriza government in Greece over fighting austerity was not preordained. If the government had shown the courage of the Greek people, and refused to capitulate to the capitalists and their EU institutions, the outcome could have been very different. However, to effectively prevent the attempted sabotage of the capitalist class, inside or outside the EU, will pose the question of taking socialist measures, in order to remove control of the economy and finance system from the tiny and elected minority who currently hold it in their hands. Pleading with the City of London to stabilize the markets, before we get into government, as John McDonnell suggests to The Guardian, will never prevent the financial markets trying to attack a government which threatens their obscene profits. Nor will it work to beg multinational corporations to stay in Britain, if they think they can make a bigger profit by moving to a country with cheaper labor. Instead, socialist measures, bringing into democratic public ownership the 125 or so big corporations and banks that control around 80% of Britain's economy, would be posed. This would provide the possibility of developing a democratic, socialist plan of production that could very quickly transform the lives of millions. For workers continuing to suffer brutal capitalist austerity in Greece, Spain, Portugal, and Ireland, indeed to workers everywhere, it would act to show a way forward to a new, socialist world. Not a penny to be paid in a divorce bill, to subsidize the capitalist elites of Europe banned zero-hour contracts, £10 an hour minimum wage for all, abolition of all anti-trade union legislation. For the right of all workers to freely organize, and when necessary strike, in defense of their and other workers' interests, no race to the bottom. The rate for the job for all workers. For democratic trade union control over hiring new workers, for the right of all EU workers currently in Britain to remain with full rights, and to demand the same for UK workers and other EU countries, immediate scrapping of all rules demanding competitive tendering, limiting state aid and opposing nationalization. This would remove the legal obstacles to councils bringing all local services back in-house. It would enable the immediate renationalization of all privatized public services such as rail, energy, and water. It would remove the obstacles to renationalizing the NHS, throwing out the private multinational companies that are bleeding it dry for a socialist society run in the interests of the millionaires, not the billionaires. Bring the 125 major corporations and banks that dominate the economy into democratic public ownership,